Welcome to the Good Health is Good Business Show, the show focused on a healthy workforce as a competitive advantage. And now, our hosts, Dr. David Rurick and Stephen Cherniak.
Stephen, welcome back. We missed last week because we were out traveling, putting on a wellness program for brokers and insurance agents in L.A.
San Diego.
Oh, that's right. I went to... Where was I? I've been in L.A., San Diego, San Clemente.
You forgot to take the left to go
also,
south.
Park skiing in Park City. I had a great time.
You were on a junket.
I was.
How come I didn't get a junket?
I've got some frequent flyer points that I've built up.
Okay. Yeah, it was. I thought it was a good workshop, and amazing how there's a lot to be learned out there regarding wellness within our business.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Right. But it was fun to be at the Benefit Advisors Network annual meeting and speak and meet a lot of the brokers and consultants that are interested in implementing wellness programs for their clients, employers that really want to improve the health status of their population. So we were happy to participate in that event.
Mm-hmm. And we might as well piggyback off of that and introduce our sponsor for today's show, which is a member of the Benefit Advisors Network, Strategic Benefit Solutions.
SBS.
The premier benefit advisory firm here in the Southeast. You know, it's their mission to bring unexpected value to its clients through the development and execution of strategic programs that enhance not only health, wellness, but productivity.
So any of our listeners out there that are HR professionals or CEOs of corporations interested in helping improve the health status of their population, and they want a benefit consultant that really knows this business,
go to SBS.
SBS-benefits.com.
And we thank them for supporting the show.
Hey, we have a great show today.
It is. And we have a guest in the studio.
We do.
Which makes it all the more special. Katie Bell with the Gallup Organization is here. And as usual, we'll have our health tip segment.
And it'll be the
You and I.
No. W-I-I. The We Fit device.
Oh, we're going to be talking about that.
We are. You're going to see me do my balance act.
And giving that a review. And as always, we have the latest health news that has occurred over the last couple of weeks.
Let's get into it.
Let's go. Well, I have one that I wanted to share with you and get your aspect on as a medical professional. The American Medical Association just released a study looking at competition in health insurance across the country. And in 24 of the states, the two largest insurers had a combined market share of 70% or more, which means that there's a shrinking competition regarding health insurance availability for Americans here in the states. Obviously, or it's the AMA's position, is that this is not good, and it's not in the best interest of the economic, not only of the economy, but the patients regarding lack of competition. And what do you think of that, Dr. Dave?
Well, I think from a physician standpoint, that's probably true. But, you know, only about probably less than 5% of physicians today, when they graduate, go into private practice and have an entrepreneurial bent to them. Most of them are employees anyways. Even though we have probably only the five majors out there, the Anthems, the Cignas, the Aetnas, the Uniteds, et cetera, they are dwindling. But, you know, when you really look at it, and that's a lot more than most countries have who have nationalized medicine. There's only one payer there.
Yeah, that's a good point. So there are still options out there, but as the options shrink, then you have less control to be able to voice your issues regarding rising prices, shrinking services with that.
That's true. But, you know, from my standpoint, it's really the insurance company's expertise to pay claims and provide network discounts and maybe monitor the quality of care that's being delivered. But it's really the employer's responsibility to drive a culture of health and wellness within their own organization. You can't rely on your insurance company to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Good health is good business.
That's my take.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on any other news?
Well, you know what? I have a news article here from Tuesday's Wall Street Journal on the U.S. neglecting high blood pressure. I think it's a very important issue that we need to talk about. A critical new report declares that high blood pressure in the U.S. is a neglected disease. Now, that's kind of odd. because, you know, that term is really used for things like tropical illnesses or plague.
And it's the first thing that happens to you when you get into your doctor's office.
You'd
don't
think
they
so.
Put a cuff on and take your blood pressure?
Yeah, you'd think so, but no, that's not true. What the Institute of Medicine has found and reported that even though 1 in 3 Americans either have hypertension or they are pre-hypertensive, that physicians in general have kind of been not too interested in hypertension. They don't even check it sometimes. It's relatively easy to prevent and treat.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that treatment isn't rocket science. But basically, you cut the salt, you eat more potassium, you exercise, you lose some weight, bingo, your blood pressure is controlled. But physicians need to be a little more, diligent in driving that pressure down to goal.
And particularly as it's increasing, because the prevalence of it, I've noticed in the screenings that we've done with our clients over the last 18, 24 months, has shown a slight uptick in the pre-hypertensive stage or area of it. So
that's right. It's an important topic. Blood pressure costs about $73 billion a year, Institute of Medicine noted, and it triggers at least 1/3 of the heart attacks that do occur.
Okay.
Number one killer in this country, so get with it out there, docs.
Well, along those lines, another risk factor in addition to high blood pressure is weight, obesity. And one of the measures that has been used to help track people and identify risk is body mass index, which is a ratio of height and weight. For people. And a study that was published through Reuters in February 12th talked about body mass index doesn't predict cardiovascular risk as well as a simple waist to height ratio, not a weight, but just waist to height measurements of it, in comparison to just the BMI. So they looked at over 7,000 patients for more than 3 years, and another study run parallel to that looked at 4,000 patients over 8 years and measured the amount of cardiovascular incidents that have occurred, both heart attack and stroke, in the population based on these measurements. And they found that the height to weight had a stronger predictor of events happening than the body mass index did.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've seen some of those reports. Do you think height to weight ratio is going to supplant waist circumference?
I don't think so, and I'd be interested to hear what maybe Katie has to say about that as well, because BMI has been so ingrained now over the last 10 or so years into everything being measured and considered with it, that this would be something new that the industry probably isn't ready for or will probably more than likely ignore. It's a simple thing to do. Although body mass index is even probably a little bit easier measure to do, because all you're doing is stepping on the scale and taking somebody's height rather than actually taking physical measurements around the waist for this.
Well, you like to do just waist measurements.
Well, one of the things that I do encourage and that we've also been doing and adding to our screenings is, in addition to BMI, adding the waist circumference to it, because there are studies out there that have shown or created a new grid, particularly through the American College of Sports Medicine, of risk associated with those two extra measures. Is there anything that you've seen, Katie?
Well, we look at BMI, height, and weight, and the reason for that is because everybody knows those two numbers. People don't necessarily know their waist except perhaps their pant size.
Right.
Might be the closest, but I think most of us don't necessarily have a measuring tape to measure that. So we definitely look for those numbers that people know off the top of their head, which is height and weight.
Yeah, and Steve doesn't like to do the height because most people are taller than he is.
Everybody's taller than I am. Yeah. You know, so I try to avoid that.
Well, I think that probably covers the news for this week.
I think so, too.
We need to really get into our guest segment.
We do.
All right, so that's the last one.
John Harris, Chief Wellness Officer with HealthWays. And you're listening to the Good Health is Good Business show, the show focused on a healthy workforce as a competitive.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Katie Bell. to our show. We heard from her just a minute ago, but Katie is the partner of Global Wellbeing for Gallup, the Gallup organization. She leads Gallup's well-being initiatives, including the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index, which we'll talk about shortly. She joined Gallup in 2005 as a healthcare partner, practice partner, and she brought to Gallup 12 years' experience in consulting with healthcare leaders on productivity, employee engagement, succession planning, patient loyalty, nurse recruitment, and retention. And we welcome you to the show, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you here in the studio with us.
Yes.
You know, most of our guests we do telephonically, and they all tell us that they have great radio faces, but we can tell by looking at you that you have a great TV face.
Well, and we're speaking of well-being. My home is literally less than a mile here from here, so I probably should have walked, but I'm going to use the snow as my reason for... driving
can't
over
believe
here.
It, March 2nd, snowing
in Atlanta.
So sad. So sad. But let's talk about the Well-Being Index, okay? And I know it's a joint venture with Healthways. Mm-hmm. Can you explain the idea behind it as far as who came up with it and what's the general purpose of it?
Sure, and I'll try not to make the history too extensive. But for Gallup, you know, for 70 years, we've studied what's on the hearts and minds of people throughout the globe. So we have a World Poll, which is a study of citizens in 160 different countries, looking at things such as leadership, work, whether or not they plan to stay in the country in which they live. And if they were to leave, what country would they want to leave to? So we can start to look at immigration and help predict that. So our science is around behavioral economics, which is predicting how people will behave. So whether it's time to vote for president, and if we call out and ask people tomorrow if you were to go out and elect the president, you know, who would you vote for? So we're predicting how people will behave. So there was all of that research that is pretty recent. So the World Poll's been around for about 5 years. On top of that, we were looking at the Milken Institute study, which took a look at healthcare costs in America in 2007, which was over $2 trillion, combined with their projection that by 2017 it would be $4 trillion. Clearly, if we were looking at getting into a very expensive cost for our country, you know, 20% of our GDP, which $4 trillion in 2027 would indeed be, there needed to be a better way to control the cost of healthcare. So we went around and met with our senior scientists, which include Danny Kahneman, who's a Nobel laureate. We met with the former director of the CDC. We met with NIH, people across the country as well as the globe, to really ask them, if we're going to contain healthcare costs, what is it that we need to look at? And everybody came back with, you need to look at wellness or well-being. We need to create a leading indicator of health. So before we have to amputate somebody's foot because they're diabetic and didn't control their food intake or didn't exercise, and this is the point to where they got, what if we could back up, if you will, and look at a leading indicator of health? So the thought behind it is to create really the Dow Jones Industrial Average of wellness. So we need to create a number that leaders can look at on a regular basis, and it's meaningful. So we decided, well, if we're going to do something like this, it needs to be big. And Healthways, of course, is just a terrific partner because their expertise is really around doing great work and helping people become healthier and really moving the dial on well-being. Mm-hmm. So we came together in January 2nd of 2008, and we began interviewing 1,000 Americans a day. And it's 1,000 because that's a valid sample of the U.S. population.
Okay.
So boy, they could have just asked us. We would have told them this.
Yeah, why bother?
Yeah, why? Yeah, come on. We know.
But you mentioned big and 1,000 mm-hmm. a day. Okay, so you talk to 1,000 people a day, but literally it takes almost 20,000 calls.
Over 20,000, 26,000 actually, to get that sample of 1,000. And then once we get somebody on the phone, once they hit the right sample size, so they're the right ethnicity, they're, you know, in order for us to make sure it's a representative sample of the U.S., we have a 96% completion rate. So people want to talk about this. And the survey's about 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's not too extensive. It's not too long. But we're really impressed and amazed by our response rate.
And there's no incentives tied to this,
nope.
Gift card or anything if they completed it as well.
You're correct. Yeah. There is no extra incentive.
Well, I think that's great because I'm curious, you know, how is America doing? What is our wellness index?
Well, you know, one thing that's really interesting about this overarching thought behind it is so many scientists, and I'm sure perhaps the two of you experts in this field might have came back and told us, well, we're not going to see a lot of change on a day-to-day basis in America. And what we have found is that we indeed do see change. So what's been really interesting for us is that if you look at America, so for example, one of the things that we look at is life evaluation. So do you feel as though if you were to consider yourself on Hallie Cantrell's Ladder of Life from 0 to 10, where would you place yourself today? Where would you place yourself 5 years from now? And at the beginning of 2008, when we started this, Americans, there's either thriving, struggling, and suffering are our three categories. And so we found that 56% of Americans were thriving, which is terrific. I mean, that's a good percentage. But, of course, we didn't know what that meant because we had just started doing this. But as 2008 went on, and obviously we saw what was happening on Wall Street, we looked at the bailouts, people losing their homes, foreclosure rates on the rise, it went down substantially. So we went down to around 39%, I think, in November of 2008, only about 39% of Americans were thriving. Mm-hmm. So now we've seen the good news is we're on an uptick. People do have hope. People do believe things are indeed getting better. So that life evaluation, so that overall evaluation of life is on the rise. So I think most recently in February, we looked at February, we were over 50% of Americans are thriving again.
Yeah. And if you go to the website, you can just click and it shows you month to month. Mm-hmm. It's just a nice chart showing month to month, both 2008 and 2009, right? The different scores. In 2009 seems to be tracking at a much higher level than the 2008 data was.
And, Katie, it's not just America. You can actually break this down into smaller geographical areas, can't you?
We can. So we have the daily sample of the U.S., but then what we just released a few weeks ago was rankings. So we look at the state rankings, so where all the states of the country come out in overall well-being, and then you can also look at the six domains that we're evaluating. And now we can also go down to our sample sizes large enough where we can look at MSAs as well as congressional districts. So now we can start to compare cities, which has really, been a fun exercise. And again, the whole point of this is to create a leading indicator of health and then to also get leaders really involved with this because it's truly up to them to make an impact and to make a difference. You know, I think smoking is the perfect example in our country where, we used to have, over 50% of Americans were smoking. All of us would probably be smoking in the studio if it were 20 years ago. But leadership came together within communities and within the workforce and said, we care about your health and we're no longer going to allow this. And now CDC, if you look at their studies, they can predict when smoking will be eliminated in our country, when it'll be under 1%.
So other than presenting it, if I go to the website, which is www.wellbeing.com,
index.com,
other than going to the website, what's the next plan with HealthWays and Gallup as far as packaging it, presenting it to leaders or whatever for the next step?
Right. So you had mentioned Los Angeles. As well as other American cities across the country, we've had conversations with wellness associations who are obviously linked and well-networked with employers within communities, as well as chambers of commerce. So I was actually recently in Los Angeles myself a few weeks ago. And the conversation now is, well, we want to go deeper into our city. So we are collecting zip code level data as well as demographic data. So whether or not you're married, your income, your education level. And so now we can go ahead. And if we can oversample is what we're calling it. So if we can oversample within a city, so let's say in a city the size of Los Angeles, let's say we oversampled 1,000 Los Angeles citizens a week. Now we'd have a really nice indicator and a ticker tape, if you will, of where Los Angeles is in overall well-being. And if we start to notice that basic access, so for example, do you have access to a physician? Do you have a dentist? Do you have a safe place to exercise? We could look at those zip codes in which those are scoring really low, and leaders can come together to say, okay, what do we need to do to fix this problem? What's the low-hanging fruit? How do we, move the dial on well-being in these areas?
One of the things I like about this so much is that if you listen to what what Katie is saying. She's talking about areas how a community can come together and improve the wellness index or wellness, you know, perception of an area. And so many of the areas that she talks about are dependent upon our civic leaders, our communities, our governments. They are not driven by necessarily the physician community, who is a specialist in the sickness industry. I've always been impressed the fact how public health measures have significantly extended life expectancy so much more than, let's say, what the doctor does in his own office with sick people. So it really is a total community effort to improve the wellness status of an area.
Right. Specific to our listeners that might be involved in corporate wellness, what advantage would studying the index be for them as far as the information that could be available and applied to, say, within a worksite setting? What learnings could result?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that you could take a look at, and again, this is publicly available, is even just look at either congressional districts or zip codes where maybe your headquarters resides, or, you know, you have a manufacturing plant and, you know, predominantly where most of your employees live, and just taking a look at those areas and seeking out, gosh, what are, you know, some areas of improvement. One of the things we do measure is work environment. So do you have the opportunity to do what you do best every day? Do you have a manager who treats you like a partner or a subordinate? So we really get a sense of really how people are being treated. And when we look at disease burden, we find that people with 4 or more chronic disease burden plus a negative work environment are missing 16 more days of lost productivity out of the year than those who have a positive work environment with the same number of chronic disease burdens. So it is really important for business leaders and, you know, CEOs and executives of companies who employ lots of people, or even maybe a smaller group of people, to really understand the issues within their area and with their employee population.
So that would be one suggestion to, say, a company's leadership, HR director or manager, to look at the index specific to their area, whether it's a city or congressional district, to get a fuller understanding of which they're part of, microcosm of.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we also have ways, both HealthWays and Gallup, you know, to really look at well-being and how do you improve it within the organization. So HealthWays, obviously, for many years, they're terrific at really improving physical health and thinking about healthy behavior, and really have done terrific things. Actually, Gallup works with HealthWays. And then Gallup, much of our well-being is around the psychometric, emotional, thinking about employee engagement and feeling really good about what you do every day, thinking about what leaders can do to help improve well-being.
That's great. You know, Katie, Stephen and I consult all over the country, but a lot of our client work in improving population health is focused in Atlanta-based corporations. So tell me, how is the Atlanta area or Georgia as a state doing as far as the well-being index is concerned?
Great. Georgia, out of obviously 50 states, in 2008, we were 23 out of 50. 2009, unfortunately, we dropped a couple of points down to 25. So we are smack dab in the middle of the country when it comes to overall well-being. The nice thing that we do have is when it comes to life evaluation, so again, that hope and optimism and that belief that things are indeed getting better, we score really high there. So for whatever reason, there's a lot of reasons behind it, but people feel hopeful that the state is getting better overall. An area that we could definitely improve in is basic access. So again, when we think about having access to medication, having a physician, having a dentist, and also having that safe place to exercise are things that we can certainly work to improve upon. And again, that brings together the political leaders as well as the business leaders of a community to say, you know what, we want to improve and fix this. And then also Atlanta overall, out of 187 metropolitan cities that we looked at, Atlanta comes out to be 43 out of those. So we're okay. Certainly areas of improvement, but we also, one thing that really comes out about our area is that we're very social. We find that overall people's emotional health is stronger. And I can say that from firsthand experience, moving from Washington, D.C. to this area. I'm actually in Sandy Springs. It was just unbelievable to me how social everybody is in the neighborhood, and everybody asks you to play tennis, and everywhere you go, you see tennis and swim clubs. So it's a very social, people really, revolve a lot of their activities around exercise and working out.
Well, I totally agree with that, because moving down here from Michigan almost 3 years ago, that was one of the first things that I noticed, is that even entering a store, you're greeted, whereas in Michigan, you're ignored until you need somebody's attention and you go find it. You enter the community here, and it's the opposite way. They go out of their way to greet you first.
And we're big in tennis down here. Ooh, huge. Katie, do you know how to tell the Sandy Springs housewife at a funeral?
No.
She's the one wearing the black tennis dress.
Well, and actually, one thing that we have found is that people in the thriving category get 6 to 7 hours of social time a day. So one thing for all of us to think about in overall health and wellness is how many hours of social time have you had, and perhaps you need to improve it.
Well, I like the idea that George is in the middle, Steve. You know
Do
why?
You? Why?
We have lots of consulting opportunities.
I like your optimism,
yes,
Dr. Dave.
Well,
you're right about that.
And maybe you two have made a big impact, because we actually found in 2008 the work environment domain was 37th in the nation in Georgia, and it moved up to 25th in 2009.
That's all us. That's us. That's definitely us.
Yeah. So with each of these categories, of which there is a ranking or a score, and obviously there's a set of questions that create that, are those questions available for people to be able to go see for the survey?
Yeah, the domains are definitely available, and my email address is on our website, so either the Gallup.com website or the well-beingindex.com website, and I'm happy to provide those individual items.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, you need to provide them to us.
I will provide
first,
them to you.
Because as we get into the longevity of our show, I think tracking the well-being index is an important part of our message as well, and we need to become more familiar with it.
We need to update it more regularly on our website. It's there. Mm-hmm. It's on the front page of our website.
It's a link.
It's a link, yeah.
Right.
It's a link.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a widget, if you'd like to add that, and that'll update every day.
Absolutely.
Oh, we got to do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm into widgets.
It's new.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can only figure out how to do my Twitter account, I'll be really hip.
Yeah, Twitter widgets. It's beyond me.
It is, yeah. Bring in my kids.
So are there any surprises that you've noticed occurring within the index over the last 2 years, or from 2008 to 2009?
So that social time was a big one for us,
yes.
That 6 to 7 hours of social time. Another finding is the happiest day of the year, Thanksgiving Day tends to be the happiest day of the year for people.
So that's a question you ask.
So the question is, yesterday, did you experience a great deal of happiness?
Okay.
And so we ask the questions about yesterday. So we're having people in a frame of mind where they can think about an exact example in a time period. We also found that Super Bowl Sunday, Mother's Day, 4th of July, holidays are really big for Americans. We feel really good on those days. Mm. And it makes sense, because we're surrounded by friends and family members. We're getting our social time. If you have a negative work environment, a boss you don't like, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we also have found, and just to confirm what we all know, is the case of the Mondays really does exist. We see stress really go up on Monday, happiness plummets, and then as we get closer to the weekend, we start to see an increase in happiness and a decrease in stress. The other thing, and this is pretty new, and actually Danny Kahneman found this. He's at Princeton, Nobel laureate there. And he actually found that if you were to line people up by how much money they make per year, you would be able to correlate it directly to well-being. So the higher the income, the higher the overall well-being.
I believe.
Right.
Except.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When you get to $95,000 a year, after that, your well-being isn't necessarily going to go up.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
I get happier the more I'm happy. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm odd.
Well, you're not making enough money yet.
Yeah, I guess
right.
That's
it. Reached your threshold.
I got to reach that 95,000.
Yeah.
You know, the other reason they're also happy during Thanksgiving and Christmas, their bellies are full. Americans love to eat.
We do.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
Too much.
I know. It shows. Mm-hmm. Well, Katie, we ask all our
guests.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
The same question. And we'd like to get your take on it, and maybe a little bit outside of your area of expertise. But what have you found to be the most successful engagement strategy in getting members to participate in health and wellness? So if you work with clients and such.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I would use Gallup as an example because we're very dedicated to improving our well-being and our wellness within mm-hmm. our own organization. So when we built our new building in Omaha, we put in a gym. There's a workout facility. We've got aerobics classes. We eliminated donuts. We eliminated sugary sodas. But we have a COO who really cares about us, and she's very willing. She works on building relationships with all of the Gallup employees, but she's also willing to sit down and have a conversation with you kind of around that care to say, gosh, you know, how do we work in helping to improve your health? And mm-hmm. so it's an adult conversation. And then also she's down there working out as well. And so she really leads by example throughout the organization, and our managers, a part of really what they're rated on and their performance criterion is around this wellness piece. So, again, that's why, you know, HealthWays has been a great partner for us. And she's, Jane Miller is our COO. She actually said, we want you to push us. We want you to make us better. Mm-hmm. And we're very, very open to all their advice.
Yeah, great example.
Great. Good. Lead by example.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Caring, and which results in culture.
Absolutely.
Wellness culture.
Katie, you've been a real pleasure to have on the show today. How can people learn more about Gallup or the Wellness Index if they want to learn more?
Great. Yeah, I would say well-beingindex.com is our website, and you can see the latest updates and data. We also have all of our articles there. Gallup.com is always an easy site, and we have links to the well-beingindex.com site too.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks so much for being
on
the show, and look forward to having you back with an update on the Well-Being Index in the future.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we do the,
We're going to talk about we.
We're going to talk about
you
we.
And I.
You and
no.
We're going to talk about the We Fit device and program.
So you've tried it.
I have, and I was a star, Alan, we'll let you know.
Really?
Yes. Even after a bottle of wine and a couple cocktails, the Balance Yoga program, I shined.
You did?
I did.
Or you thought you shined.
Yeah, I held the tree position and that little circle where you have to, you know, not waver, and I was like mm-hmm. top three.
Mm-hmm. So there are advantages to alcohol consumption.
No.
Outside of cardiovascular risk,
yeah.
we assistance.
This
but
is
I
risk.
Tried it,
you,
too,
you
over
did.
the summer. Okay. Last summer, my niece brought it to the house we were staying, a little summer house, up in the Georgia mountains, and we played it for the week that we were there. And I thought it was great.
Because, you know, we're going to have to step back a little bit, because there could be some of our listeners in the audience. There might be a few of them that are over 50 or maybe over 55, and they just don't know what we're talking about. This is the We device and program made by
Nintendo. Right. Called We Fit.
Right.
Right. And it connects, and it's basically a software program that connects to your television, and you follow it as any video game, but with the angle of fitness.
Exactly.
So you have a little balance board that comes with it, and electronically you can do different exercises on it, such as balance, strength exercises, running. It associates it to yoga.
And sports.
And other sports
and
as well.
I played baseball. They were throwing me the pitches at different speeds, and I was swinging the bat. You can play tennis. You can play against an opponent. You swing the tennis racket. You can do... running?
And all your movements are captured electronically and presented in a little cartoon character of yourself on the television screen.
An avatar. Yes.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yes.
So what's the advantage? I mean, is this going to help somebody's fitness? What do you think?
Well, first of all, it is really fun, and it is a social activity. You get a bunch of people in a room, and you start using this Wii device. Everybody has a ball.
So it's engaging.
It's very engaging. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is you're moving. It's not like you're sitting on the couch playing a video game. You're actually moving, and that's what we need to get people to do. Great for seniors. Fantastic for nursing homes, assisted living.
That's where I think the real value is. For people who either, one, can't get out of the house because of their limited, not mobility, but access to be able to get to the gym or even get outside and walk and such. Two, for people who might be embarrassed because of their present physical condition, I mean, whether being overweight or inactive, to get out into a class, group-oriented class, it allows them the chance to do that and motivated right there within their in the house.
And immediate feedback. That's the other thing I like about it. Because if you want to learn yoga poses, if you want to learn Pilates, if you want to learn, you know, whatever, the program, when you're standing on that little balance board, tells you if you're in the right position, if you're holding the position correctly. And so you can immediately, by looking at the TV screen, adjust your position to the where, you know, where you should be.
Right.
And then it scores you. And you can sign on tomorrow and see if you can do better.
Yeah, you did. Right. Yeah. So from a single person or a family unit, unquestionably, I think it's a great addition, or it should be a great addition to a household program. What about the worksite? Do you see any application where it might apply?
Listen, I think you put one of these things in the break room, and I bet you might have a hard time getting people back to work because they'd be having so much fun to play it. But yeah, I think it's cost-wise, certainly a lot less than a treadmill, maybe $400 for the entire unit and all the software that comes with it, and a relatively inexpensive purchase for a company.
Yeah, because it's a single-user type of thing, that might be the limited factor within a company as far as trying to apply it to a group setting or one at a time. But creating challenges like that,
sure.
I agree with it from a break area. So I think we both like it.
We love it.
We give it a healthy review.
We give it a healthy review. Two thumbs up from Dr. Dave and Steve.
Sounds good. Well, let's wrap up.
Okay.
We want to mention where we're going to be next week after a radio show.
You're right. We will be speaking at the University of Michigan Health Management Research Center's annual wellness conference put on by Dee Eddington. And we will be talking about, what's our lecture?
Delivering programs to the under 500 employee companies.
Oh,
the
yes.
Small to medium-sized companies and the challenges that go with that.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's right, and we've seen all three. That's March 10th and 11th. For those people who might be interested in going, particularly up in the Midwest area where it's a little more convenient for them, we encourage them. Dr. Eddington has a wonderful conference every year. This is his 30th one. And for more information, they can just go to the Health Management Research Center's website. I won't say it, but just Google University of Michigan Wellness Conference, and no problem in finding it.
And if any of our listeners would like copies of our slides, you can certainly always contact us at info@healthybusinessradio.com or drdave@healthybusinessradio.com or just Steve.
At HealthyBusinessRadio.com. We want to thank our sponsors, Strategic Benefit Solutions.
And today's guest,
Katie Bell
of the Gallup Group.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
And next week, our guest is Chuck Reynolds, a partner with the Benfield Group, a research strategy group. And Chuck will be talking about one of their latest papers on influencing senior management.
That's right. Very important. The key thing for a success of a wellness or population health improvement program.
Number one. So until next time,
we are keeping you on target. We are online and on demand at www.healthybusinessradio.com. Until next week,
good health is good business.